Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everybody.
Jeez. And I kind of thought that was all done. Hello?
Jack? Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Gwen.
Okay. I was having electronic problems. Hello?
Oh, that's why it's so late. Okay.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday show with Jack Jodell and Gwen Berry. We've yet to get Wayne on. He was hanging on. I saw him in here before when I was trying to get in myself. So, and hello to David out there in the chat room.
Hello, David.
Please feel free to call in, David. Oh, boy. Did you have a nice week, Jack?
Yes, and you too?
Well, I had a good week. Yeah, I had a good week.
The Democratic debates were less frivolous and less fun, but they were a lot more substantive, I thought, than their Republican counterparts. But I'm sure we'll discuss that as the night goes on.
The debates were basically very different from the Republican debate. They brought up issues that people are actually concerned about. Well, people that are paying attention to what's going on around them without the lens of Fox News, I guess. I'm not sure where to put the descriptions on that. But,
well, people that are concerned about what's facing the world and both domestic and foreign menaces and ideas, and it was fascinating in certain respects and lacking in others, but that's how I would characterize it.
Well, I got asked to give my opinion on the candidates so far here this week on some other broadcast, and I basically right now, I saw a really good piece of film. Acronym Television is back.
Yes, I saw that too with Dennis Traynor. He did a great job. I just saw it yesterday, I think, and it was very interesting. He was kind of debating himself for a while there and analyzing the candidates. Was that the same piece?
Yeah, I feel very much as Mr. Traynor does, and Dennis is the fellow who gave us the "What do you stand for?" integrity and
right.
thought, and you know, and he does a good job of it. He really captured a lot.
He really did, and he dissected and analyzed each candidate's position quite well, and he made recommendations. I thought it was a very, very good program. I didn't see the whole thing. I saw about 40 minutes of it, but it was great to see.
Yeah, I didn't see that much. I saw the piece that he was doing on Bernie Sanders and the debate and how about feeling the burn, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right now, as far as it goes, there is no other candidate that I can see that is a viable candidate out there for my attention or support other than
right.
Mr. Sanders. At this point, he's not ideal.
He's not. He's vulnerable on guns. He's vulnerable on drone attacks. He's vulnerable on certain national security
on
issues.
Military, he's very much a war hawk, as much as Clinton is. On the other hand, I was kind of put up to it, as they say, and questioning. Well, okay, say Sanders loses the debate. And Hillary is the candidate for the Democratic Party. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to give up my vote.
I guess Huffington Post characterized Clinton as the winner in a 5,000-person poll that they conducted. It was something like 52-33%. But the immediate post-poll results, I don't know where they were taken from or how scientific they were, maybe they weren't, but they characterized Bernie Sanders as the overwhelming winner. So all three candidates, major candidates, O'Malley, Clinton, and Sanders, did a good job and didn't detract from themselves, I don't believe. And
what did you think of Jim Webb?
Not much.
I didn't know he was out there. David is contributing. Is it the candidate or the possibility of progress for the next 4 years, since progress probably is not possible? Do you vote for the candidate that will create the least amount of damage? And David really puts it succinctly for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point, Bernie is the candidate that would do the least amount of damage. But
I agree.
Those are famous last words, too.
Mm-hmm.
You vote for somebody like Mr. Sanders, who seems like really a good guy, as it were,
mm-hmm.
as far as a lot of the issues that I'm very interested in. Climate change is number one, of course.
Wealth inequality.
Wall Street, yes. He basically, he's got Seth MacFarlane pounding the pavement for him right now.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to see some of the people from the iconic part of our world, you know, the stars, as it were, come out and start talking instead of just hearing from a few guys that were on Law and Order for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to hear a few stars that people might relate to and listen to. Because
mm-hmm.
you don't listen to the candidate, yet when Seth MacFarlane steps up and starts talking about climate change and how Senator Saunders is his views on it, and this is why he's supporting him, people start to listen. I do think that those Hollywood types have a great deal of influence on the general community.
Well, I think a lot of them have been dazzled by Hillary and Bill, you know, indirectly. And I don't know that they're willing to divorce themselves from her quite yet. But we'll see. As time goes on and they have more Democratic debates, we'll see where Hollywood lines up. And quite frankly, it's really pathetic, isn't it, when you think about it, that people need Hollywood figures to help them make up their minds?
It really is. It basically is. David is saying in the chat, I want to put his conversation in with ours.
Yes.
I don't slam people that go for Bernie to feel the burn, so to speak. He is bringing up some conversation in certain things.
Yes.
I slam the process and the possibility. Conversation is not change, and Bernie is not going to change anything. Hillary will get things done, unfortunately. Those things are terrible. You know, and he has a point, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something. I said to someone just today, I'm looking right now at being supportive of Senator Sanders because his thinking aligns with mine on some very important issues, but not all, and certainly other important issues I'm totally against him.
Sure.
Krull brings up a point. He's not going to get anything done. We don't know that, but we can actually do the math on that one because, mm-hmm. as Bernie himself says, you want to vote me in, that's great, but you're going to have to do more than just vote me in. You're going to have to get out in the streets and change this so that
yes.
I do by voting out the rest of the dumb bastards who are in there. Keeping things from getting done.
Well, he's trying to build a really broad-based movement of millions upon millions of people, and that's quite an undertaking, and I don't know that he can accomplish it in a year and a half or whatever time he has left here. It's very admirable, and I support him 100%, and we've got to get people more fired up and activated and wanting to take part in the electoral process. We can't let them sit home like they did in 2014 and 2010. You know what happened after that, Citizens United, the Republican control of Congress that has led to nothing but obstruction and backward legislation. We've got to change the scope here.
Absolutely. There's that to be done.
And I won't stand in his way. I'll certainly support him every step of the way. I'm a little bit uneasy about the gun. I think he's going to moderate himself on guns. I hope so. he's going to realize that he isn't just president of rural. If he's president, he won't be president of a rural state anymore. He'll be president of the United States, rural and urban, you know.
I think he's pretty aware of all these things.
I think so, too.
But I will say this. Clinton has the better head. She's got a better strategic mind, I think, than Senator Sanders. The trouble is she's just not on our side. She's gonna walk the banksters. I want to inject here further conversation from chat with Crow. He's saying that this election comes down to making sure no Republicans do not make office and then going after change in different directions other than trying to elect a savior.
Mm-hmm.
Change is only coming from non-conventional means. I see where he's coming from. And
sure,
he has
sure.
a point. And he has a successful point if it's done right.
Exactly.
And I think to a certain extent, Senator Sanders is looking for that kind of a changeover too. Maybe he thinks it's got to be conventional, but what is conventional? There's never been a massive vote out like we need to make things change.
Well, there, you forget your history, Gwen. In 1932, there was a huge, massive rollout. There had been Republican complacency for years and years and years. The Great Depression hit. In 1930, the Democrats, for the first time in years, won control of the Congress. And in 1932, they overwhelmingly won control of the White House, and they repeated that overwhelming victory in 1936. And that's what we need. We need a massive change in the way things are done and the way the Congress is made up and the way it obstructs. Now we've got to end that. We've got to get it with an activist Congress.
Well, yes, and that's the thing. You're talking about savvy politicians that came in each of those instances to fill those gaps. It was very much an in-office or back-office game when that went on with the Democrats. They knew what they were doing, and they had to do it. I mean, FDR called all of the banksters into his office, and he persuaded them with whatever he held over their heads to basically, because of the crash, to basically bail the country out financially.
And to his credit, he nominated or he appointed or nominated, however it went, I forget, Frances Perkins, the very first female cabinet person to head the Labor Department, a very powerful position. And man, did she go to town. She basically created Social Security, many of the great programs that we have come to adopt and accept as normal parts of Americana today. You know, Social Security, unemployment compensation, all these wonderful things that we couldn't imagine being without. That was Frances Perkins, a woman that did that. What a great woman she was.
Well, you know, David brings up another good point, too. He says that suppose Bernie is not given the Democratic nomination. There has been a past example of overwhelming candidate not getting the nomination. And
very good, like Henry Wallace.
Or Eugene Debs.
Oh, very true. Very true. Yep. Very true.
We don't know. The other
it was backroom deals that got rid of Henry Wallace in 1944. Otherwise, he would have succeeded FDR rather than Truman, who was kind of a middle of the roader, who did blaze somewhat of a progressive path, but not as much as Henry Wallace would have done.
Well, he got Medicare, in.
LBJ got Medicare in. Truman pushed for it, but he didn't get it.
Well, he was the first president to have Medicare. I'm sorry, you're right.
To propose it, yeah.
Well, and to also have the...
Oh, to receive it, yeah.
Yeah.
He was the first recipient, yeah.
Yeah, and he was a goddamn fool for Missouri. I agree with that.
I forgot all about that little tidbit. That's very true. But the actual program, you know, he was in support of national health care, but he never got anywhere with it. But LBJ found a way to make it. He rammed it through Congress in 1965, to his credit, as one of the great things he did during his administration. And he instituted Medicare and Medicaid. And what a wonderful thing he started with that has saved millions upon millions of lives and made people's lives easier as a result.
Well, you know, Jack, there's plenty of them out there that are basically when we're talking about getting somebody elected and having somebody elected who inspires more people to vote and to throw out the Republicans,
right, there's
no guarantee that Democrats are going to do, you know, any different than the Republicans have done. And I think what Krell's pointing to, and what Dennis Traynor and others within the activist community are pointing to, is that it isn't about red or blue, because they're all bought and paid for. It's like
exactly. People
talking endlessly about Joe Biden running.
I gotta say,
you know, Joe Biden might be a really sweet man personally, to get to know him or whatever. Hell, I drank a beer with John McCain and liked him at the time, until Bush kicked him in the ass. But, I mean, he was a nice guy. I had no trouble with that. But you get Joe Biden is nothing but the bankster bagman.
Yeah, he's a shill for the banks. I know. I'm very aware of that.
And that's why he's in the White House now and has been.
Sure.
And anybody who's sitting around waiting for Biden to throw his hat in, I mean, first of all, shit or get off the pot.
Right. Well, first of all, Dennis Traynor, you probably didn't see this part of it, but he did an analysis of Hillary Clinton, too, and his recommendation was, if you think Hillary Clinton is going to really change things for the positive, for the most working people and stuff, he said, forget about it. He said, it's not going to happen. He said that change has to come from, he recommended grassroots organizations and social movements as opposed to individual politicians. And there's a lot to be said for that. It made me think a lot, and I thought, yeah, man, you got a point there, big time. And Hillary Clinton, you know damn well she's going to talk left, and then she's going to govern center right. That's what she's going to do. So we're going to have another Obama in the White House if she's elected. That's exactly what you're going to end up with, plus one that's more of a hawk.
Well, but Bernie has just, you know, spoken his endorsement. He endorses the drone war, especially if he can get it to focus on Palestine.
Right, yeah.
He also endorses keeping our guys in Afghanistan.
I don't like that either. Yeah.
Keeping us as the, you know, the Middle East police unit, and it's getting pretty effing dangerous over there. You've got Soviet MiGs and air fighter, you know, air war going on against.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too god darn close over there.
Yeah,
it's
getting
edgy. It's getting really edgy.
Well, it's really pathetic. You know, our Middle Eastern policy has been bankrupt, regardless of Democrat or Republican presidents in Congresses. It doesn't matter. It's the same old bullshit U.S. policy, foreign policy, that says Israel is our friend. We've got to support her at all costs. No, we don't. Israel needs to be brought into line. Israel is out of control. Israel needs to be regulated. And I'm not anti-Israel. I want Israel to survive. But I also want her to quit formulating dissent and upheaval in the Mideast. I want her to be a responsible Middle Eastern country and get along with her neighbors and not provoke them and not occupy Palestine the way she does, like the Nazis occupied Poland. There's a lot to be said for the bad things Israel's doing right now, and I like Israel, but I don't want them to disappear. I don't want them to be conquered. I don't want them to be decimated. But I don't like what they're doing right now. It's a bad, bad thing, and they're disgracing their own name by the things that they're pulling against the Palestinians and the Palestinian people. It's genocide.
Well, yeah, they've got an open air prison going on over there as far as Palestine goes, and it's heating up quite a bit. I mean, there's been a lot of violence in the old city of Jerusalem, too, which is always a powder keg area for anything that exasperates all of the tender situations towards violence over there.
Yeah,
and that's what they're getting. They've got the stabbings. But hell, you know, you go to Fort Myers, Florida, man, you can't even be a zombie anymore. There was a shooting here in the state of Florida in Fort Myers last night at a zombie festival. You know, kids getting young people. People who enjoy doing that kind of thing. I mean, and there's a lot of, I know folks who like to go and attend a festival or two. My sister takes her son to Universal for Halloween a lot when he was growing up to be part of the big, you know, they dress up and kind of all of that. So they had a zombie festival going on in Fort Myers, and somebody, a sniper, opened fire, killed one and wounded five others before taking off.
There are far too many mass shootings going on nowadays. There's one a day, I think. What kind of country are we to have one mass shooting a day? I don't care how many millions we have here. They don't have one mass shooting a day in China, for God's sakes. They're a lot more populous than we are. So is India, and they don't have one mass shooting a day. It's insane. This reliance on guns to solve problems, or just the access to guns, and the reluctance to make any regulation or any restriction whatsoever for gun ownership is going to be the death of this country. It's just very terrible what the NRA is doing and the way they've misinterpreted the Second Amendment. It's just terrible.
Well, I agree with you there. This consistency of publicity with shootings is not a firestorm up in D.C. It's part of the headlines today.
Well, they're all bought out. The NRA is bought out, and most of the politicians in Washington, and that's why there's no change on it.
Well, the president is actually talking about taking an executive action.
Boy, that'd bring out the militias down south and all over the country.
You know,
the mountains of Idaho would be full of extremists going nuts over that decision. But you know what? It's almost come to that point. It is just that out of control. Both in the rural areas and in the cities, people are just blowing people away for no reason. They walk onto school campuses, shoot students for no reason. They do the craziest things. This used to be a rarity. Now it's becoming commonplace, and that is very dangerous.
Well, it also goes to speak about our healthcare system, and especially emotional mental health, and how that's taken.
It's neglected. It's underfunded. And thanks, Republicans. Thanks, conservative Democrats. Thanks, Blue Dogs. It's underfunded. It's not, research isn't being done properly. And we have mountains of people, millions of people that are owning guns that shouldn't be.
Well, and there's also the question of the people that surround them, making them enabled to.
Oh, yeah. Like those mothers that thought it would be good for their kids to learn about guns. How insane.
That's what I would call awesome stupid.
Like Adam Lanza's mother, and he ended up killing her, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome stupid. I mean, children who live or grow up in, especially rural areas where hunting is part of the family tradition or the necessity of putting meat on the table during the winter. I know people like that in upstate New York. And, hey, they're friends of mine, and they actually are very, very responsible about what they do with guns, how they handle them, and how their children learn to take care of weapons or use weapons.
Properly, that's right. That's a good point. And, you know, that's the overwhelming majority of rifle owners and gun owners, that is the way they are. But there's just a few that are getting their hands on guns who just shouldn't have them in the first place. You know, Gwen, let's look at this. We restrict driving to people that have driver's licenses. They have to be qualified to drive a car. They have to know what they're doing. They have to pass a test to drive a car, and then they have to get insurance, liability insurance, or they can't drive that car. Now, why don't we do the same thing with guns? Why don't we have a period where they have to learn about the gun before they can buy it or own it and use it, and they have to be licensed to own the gun, and they have to have insurance, otherwise they can't own the gun?
Well, I like the insurance because that makes it like you can't just go out and buy a weapon. Now you have to put some financial responsibility into carrying that weapon and using it.
Yeah, and if your rates would go up if you were a wife beater or you had been convicted of some kind of violent crime or some kind of criminal activity, for you to own a gun, you could own the gun, but your insurance rates would skyrocket the way they would do with a risky driver.
Now,
doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Now, why should cars, which also can kill people, why should cars be different than guns? Because the Constitution didn't talk about cars? Give me a break. You know?
Yeah.
Why did early in the 20th century did they begin to allow speed limits on cars and requirements about safety features on cars, and now they're resisting any kind of regulations whatsoever on guns or gun ownership? Now, why is there the difference between the two? Both of them can kill people. Both of them can be misused and can be recklessly misused. Why don't we use the same common sensibility and come up with sensible gun restrictions and regulations for guns that we have for cars?
Well, I agree with you, Jack.
I'm posing this question to all the rabid right-wingers out there that, you just can't touch guns. Leave guns alone. You know, I don't agree with that philosophy one little bit.
Well, basically, I don't know what the argument is if it isn't about
it's my Second Amendment rights, and that's a misnomer too. They say that it's your Second Amendment right to own a gun. That is not true. Individual gun ownership was never sanctioned in the Constitution. They wanted to provide for a free and well-regulated militia, and most militias, you don't keep a gun at home. You go to a place and they have them stored there, and you use them in the event of some kind of danger. And that's what a militia is for, not this crazy militia stuff where guys own guns like mad and roam the countryside and shoot at will. That's not what a militia is. That's a misinterpretation of it.
There's a lot of social issues that are leading to a lot of these. You know, a lot of these massive gun, out-of-control gun, these are mostly people
who are mentally disturbed.
And they're usually male, and they're certainly fitting a profile and an age that can be, can be pinpointed. But
right.
David has been writing, and I know guys like this, and perhaps this is even your story, and most of them are also Democrats and progressives. They just live in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was growing up, guns were always around. They were never worshipped like they are today. They've gone
right.
from being tools to being iconic images of power and lifestyle,
which he's
very correct about. But, a lot of these shooters, well, a few of them have been involved in those video games, but a lot of these shooters are not amplifying or empathizing with, rappers who shoot or anything like that. They're generally just crazy. David goes on and says he probably had 5 guns when he was 16 years old. And he hunted, but that was then. It's something that's got completely out of control because of gun manufacturers, and he's correct. This is very much driven. Even the gaming industry that's so violent is supported by the gun industry.
Oh, sure. It reinforces their notion that everybody's got to have protection and have the ability to blow a bad guy away. And if somebody threatens you, you have the ability to self-defend yourself. Well, they've carried that to an extreme, I would say. And I'm sure everybody would just about agree with that.
Well, no, everybody doesn't. People think that you should be able to, this is the land of the free and the home of the brave, and you should be able to go out and make a profit out of a good business any way you can.
Then I ought to be able to sell atomic weapons to anybody I want, and I ought to be able to own as many as I want, too, by that rationale. That's absurd.
Yeah. We could set up a company. We could call it the Elder Table at Roundtree or something. It sounds ridiculous, but that's a libertarian point of view.
Well, those people are somewhat suspect. And her rationality is lacking.
Well, they want to keep what's theirs, and they want to share only with who they want to share with, which
exactly.
That's what my mom used to call a little piggy.
Yeah.
You want it all for yourself and nobody else can have any unless you say so? What's wrong with that?
Well, if you look at the libertarian plank for that David Koch ran under as a vice presidential candidate in 1980, just as Ronald Reagan was getting elected that election, it bears a tremendous amount of resemblance to the current Republican planks. Party has drifted so libertarian and so far rightward. They don't want any Medicare. They don't want any Medicaid. They don't want any programs for the poor. They want an end to welfare. It's all too intrusive and too limiting on freedom and all this nonsense.
They want wage slavery for everyone.
Oh yeah, no minimum wage, nothing like that. Yeah, exactly. They want just absolute freedom. Anybody can do whatever they damn well please. And you know, you can't operate a country or a company like that. You can't do it.
That's the thing. You can't operate a successful business that way. It finally folds. It crashes in on itself. And like a company that will fail under that kind of non-expansion and isolationism, you have a country, the United States of America, which is getting run right the frig into the ground right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go down when I was growing up, you know, my sister says I shouldn't use stories about myself and where I grew up because I might not be the, you know, I'm not
archetypical American. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I'll tell you what, wherever I drove in town, there weren't big old potholes. I'm in Florida for Christ.
Oh, exactly. We're going to hell in a handbasket. Our infrastructure is going straight to hell.
Yeah,
it's neglect because the rich don't want to pay any taxes. And they want to lump everything on the poor, and the poor can only handle just so much.
Well,
or the middle class and the poor have to carry the burden, and that's wrong.
The trickle-down effect has actually been put into practice, and
it's a disaster.
In terms of Clinton, and Clinton didn't really put that trickle-down on hold either. He kind of opened it up in many ways while he was slapping it back with the other hand.
Yeah.
It's
not right. Our economy's been off kilter ever since the Reagan days, and Bush made it worse. Clinton didn't do as much as he could have done. He did a disastrous thing by getting rid of Glass-Steagall, which led directly a decade later to the Great Recession of 2008. And you know, we don't need this bullshit. We don't need it. Life is too short to waste away making billionaires even richer at the expense of the poor and the middle class. You know, it's just it's unfair. It's not smart. Any way you look at it, it's bad.
So what are our alternatives now? I mean, you know, I keep thinking back when I get either confused or frustrated or fed up. I sit down and I think about what the positives are around me.
Let's expand worker co-ops. Let's do that for one thing.
Well, and crowd resourcing is becoming a big thing. And I keep thinking back to all our beginning days of getting to know each other through this global
blogosphere and Facebook and all that stuff.
And I think of Mohammed Bouazizi. I think of the Arab Spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
Occupy.
All of the groups that have. And folks get so upset and say, well, yeah, but we're failing at every, you know, everything falls down. Well, Occupy hasn't fell down. They're still working. They're still making a difference in communities, mostly here on the East Coast. On the West Coast, the remnants of it have formed into other groups that are helping their communities out. There have been great changes socially.
And there have been great inroads in the formation of worker co-ops, which is a good thing. It's locally based, it's responsive to the community, and it's fair and democratic for worker participation and worker input, and the workers benefit from it directly, a lot more so than in the typical corporate capitalist model.
Well, how do we take this cohesion that we're finding through social media? Because basically all of these things that have happened have been through the currents of social media. This is our connective quality to one another. This is the global consciousness here that we're making use of.
Right.
No, David, I'm sorry, we aren't getting a feedback here. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, Jack.
I hadn't noticed it.
I had trouble getting on, though, David, so I apologize to the guests if you're getting feedback right now or anything, or repeats. This is Blog Talk Radio. I'm using all the right anchoring electronics to log on.
Hey, Blog Talk, this is aimed at you. Maybe we should explore a different venue for our radio program. Think about it, gang. You better improve your performance.
Yeah, really. You know, you pays your ticket, you takes your ride, ain't gonna Jesus. But here's the deal. I hope that helped, David. I hope you can hear us clear now. He logged in and out. Gosh, darn it, I forgot what I'm gonna say.
Well, we're talking about social media and how we've all been united by that, and we have a common values and many things like that.
The question remains, how do we take advantage of the connective quality that we have and use it to once again gather together and make a, do we take advantage of electing somebody president? There's no denying that Occupy and several other groups and several other situations that have happened have brought community conscious to a place where people listen now.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, what it boils down to, I think, Gwen, is activism. We have got to be more active individually and collectively. We've got to be more active in our communities, in our blogs, in our in every endeavor of our lives. We've got to be activists. We've got to be united. We've got to push for great things. And if we push hard enough and united enough, we will slowly but surely begin to turn that heavy wheel.
But how do people do that? I mean, there's a lot of cohesiveness and a lot of ability to reach a lot of folks if you use Facebook right. There's a lot of they say Twitter's dying, so I'm not sure about that.
Anything that limits you to 146 characters, there's something a little bit wacky about that.
Well, actually, it drove the Occupy Wall Streets pretty damn well, but it's because you can send links through it like nobody's business.
Well, that's the only good thing about it, yeah.
Otherwise, it's
too limiting.
And David's mentioning here that what happened to Occupy must be burned into the consciousness of the activists, and it must be refined and retried over and over again, and that's what I'm
good
saying.
Good point. Good point.
You know, what do we keep doing? We keep putting out information and inviting others to do the same and to join with us collectively,
right,
and to come to consensus and agree about certain, you know, directions socially. Like, okay, well, why don't we take advantage of what's already on the dais there?
Mm-hmm.
And elect the Democratic Socialist from
Vermont. Well, one thing's for sure, the left, and I've said this many times, even many times before this election, the last election even, the left cannot afford to fight amongst itself. It's got to find common cause and work on that commonality and forget about the differences. They can be dealt with later. But find a common cause, the commonality, and push forward in a big way using that commonality as a weapon.
Excuse me, Jack. David's saying learn what worked and not be afraid of bringing the heat. And, you know, there are a lot of people throughout Europe and even in the Eastern European bloc and people in China, people in Japan, people in lots further away who have gotten together and said, we're not going to take this. And one of the things that's driving the bringing the heat, which is what David said, learn what worked and not be afraid to bring the heat. What brings the heat is it's being catalyzed by actions taken
by
governments, and most of them have been these austerity measures. Now, Greece got a boot on its neck They put a boot right back on Greece's neck. And the Greek leadership allowed this to happen because they were afraid of not having the resources to feed the people. Basically, they got bully-whipped. Financially bully-whipped.
It's kind of very, in a different way, but very much similar. It's exactly what the Soviets used to do, like what they did in Hungary and Czechoslovakia. They had to reimpose their will, their way of doing things, and it had to be that way, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it's funny how they were the bad guys, 40 years ago. And now who are the bad guys today? It's us in our capitalist system, and it's just enslaving people. Paul Ryan and all those other guys are goofs, and they're just ruining the world.
I think when we talk about just this country, when we're talking about finances, and we're just talking about this country, we are missing the point.
Oh, exactly. It's a global community.
The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, all of that banking community.
World Bank, all those guys.
Yeah, all those guys and this country are all cabaled together.
You bet they are.
I got to drink water here. I'm sorry.
Have a beer.
Okay. Well, I'll have a choke.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
I don't call anymore. I just do.
Yeah, if that'll clear your throat, that's fine.
I really want to put in what David's saying because he's making some sense here. He says
he always does.
Obama should be the lesson for everyone waiting for change. The presidential election, damn it, he keeps putting stuff in here. I keep losing my place. Hang on. The presidential election won't bring our savior. It must come from outside. And I think a focal point and a way to rally large amounts of people center on student loans.
Good
and
point.
Use that as a way to organize
students, younger people, that's right.
Yeah, and then refocus the large mass to create change.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with a slogan like, fuck the banks. And really, David, that is a slogan we were all using. It's like the guy standing on the balcony during outs, jump, you motherfucker. Get rid of, excuse my language, Jack.
Say whatever you want. It's a free country.
So far? Yeah.
To this point, certain aspects are.
Yeah.
This show is.
Well, yeah, and if it was, here's the other thing, too. A good old-fashioned American tradition here is breaking the rules and breaking the law and saying, I'm not going to do it. It's wrong. It's not right. And no matter what your law says, your law is wrong. It needs to be changed.
Or I've got a better way. I've got a better idea.
The idea of the whistleblower and the person who's ready to stand. Look what Bob Kennedy Jr. did by chaining himself to the White House this past year. He is
right.
He is a part of the justice community. He not only broke the law, he was censored by his business community. The bar censored him for it.
Mm-hmm.
When you break the law like that, you have to
pay
the fiddler. So,
yeah.
And you have to be willing to do that. It takes that kind of law break.
Great courage on his part.
Yeah, and I think that what's getting said here is that what's underlying all of this is just exactly what Senator Sanders said. We need a revolution.
Yeah.
We need a revolution.
It's got to come from the ground up. It's got to come from the local neighborhoods on upward, and eventually the dolts in Washington will get the score, and we'll be able to put our own people in there. It's a constant effort. You've got to constantly work at it. Rosa Parks didn't get civil rights just because she had a protest one day. She organized behind the scenes for many years, and with others, like-minded people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and many others. And it took a whole lot of people, constant coordinated effort to get the job done.
Well, basically it came down to politics, so.
Well, yeah, it did, of course. Yeah.
LBJ wasn't going to do dick.
Mm-hmm.
So Martin Luther King put his back up against the wall because he was willing to bleed. And he went down and he bled, and the people bled with him.
Right.
You know? Selma, Alabama. And you know what? Most young kids know about this now because people like, and nobody better give me crap about this either. Call me a cop-outer. And he's saying Oprah and a few mm-hmm. others have been putting out movies that tell the real story.
Right. I will never argue with people that tell the truth and that are whistleblowers. No. As far as I'm concerned, most whistleblowers, almost all whistleblowers, are heroes. And they should be regarded as such, instead of being acted upon as though they were pariahs or something. They're anything but a pariah. They're wonderful people. They're to be emulated. They're to be admired, and they're to be they're not to be castigated. They're to be exalted.
That's another thing wrong with Senator Sanders. He would like to prosecute Edward Snowden.
Well, he's a little more. He put it a little more enlightened than that. He believed that we can learn, and he said words to the effect of that we can learn from people like this, and he should pay the penalty for having broken the law and for having stolen what he stole. But it should be taken into account how he has benefited this country. Words to that effect, and I agree with him 100% on that. I don't think Edward Snowden should be penalized. Really, I think he did us a great service,
and
he came just at the right amount of time to blow the whistle on NSA and all these other nonsensical activities and violations of our privacy.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. I hear David Krell in the chat room. Amplifying Senator Sanders, what he said during the debate.
And here's Hillary saying, "Oh, he should be prosecuted," and all this nonsense. You know, I'm sorry, Hillary, I disagree with you.
He said Congress doesn't regulate Wall Street. Wall Street regulates Congress. It's
that was very true. Yep.
You know, if they could bring him back, and David says, Snowden should get something like 5 years probation. Perhaps if there's a President Sanders, that could happen.
And a big statue of him on the White House lawn.
Well, I don't know that they'd go that far.
Well, I know they wouldn't, but in my mind, he's deserving of it. He deserves a big statue somewhere. He did us a great service, and he protected our liberties.
Yeah, he did. But
yeah.
Now, I got to ask you, because have you seen what Donald Trump is pulling this week? I mean, I got to bring the ridiculous in before we talk.
Yeah, we got to make it entertaining, you know.
have you seen what? Well, I will say this. I did see his daughter, Ivanka, on a part of her interview. You know, she's a very bright, articulate, polite and even-minded young lady.
Yeah.
Which she really is. And, of course, she was raised by her mother, not her father. His son, on the other hand, is a cheat.
Oh, he's a jerk, just like his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like his father. And they actually posted the family tree on Huffington Post last week, where it came out that Donnie's grandfather came over from Europe as a boy, grew up here, then basically became a hotelier in Alaska during the gold rush, and kept houses of prostitutes, made a fortune, went back to Europe, and then his father emigrated back to America, and they've always been in the hotel business ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you take a look at most of the big money in this country, a lot of the big money in this country
is real estate.
Yeah, well, no, it's has made their bones in a similar fashion. I mean,
you look at
the Vanderbilts and the DuPonts and it gets really strange. But there's also a lot of families with a lot of money who have actually reinvested it into their communities and been good citizens.
Oh yes, there have. And those are people to be applauded and admired and not castigated in the least. They have been very responsible with their fundage, and they have used it for the betterment of their community and by indirect access to their world.
They're basically their leaders.
They're leaders. That's right. Yeah, they're not con artists. Or out for a quick buck, you know.
Well, and they're also the people who put the first banks up and growing communities in the industrial age, as the Industrial Revolution was going on. You could walk into a bank in upstate New York with your hat in your hand in the latter 1800s, and sit down and tell them what your idea was, how many people you wanted to employ, what your plan was, and they would give you the money on your word and your business plan and hold you responsible. If it failed, that you would pay the money back working in the town and getting it done right. I know that personally was true. That's how savings and loans were set up.
That's
what they did. Hey, can you imagine doing such a thing today? I mean, I could really use that opportunity myself to go in and say, hey, look, I don't have any equity or anything like that. My equity is in my dream and the consistency of business. I need to expand and grow. Will you help me out? No, not without equity, sweetie pie, you know.
What you have to do today is find a venture capitalist who is willing to listen to you, and they will then gladly give you money based on certain considerations and certain protections for them. Nobody's just going to hand you money anymore. Those days are over with, if they ever existed at all. But,
I think they existed. I mean, there were businesses in the community of Rochester, New York that were created that way through the savings and loan of Rochester and Monroe County Savings and Loan, where they...
Right, and that's when savings and loans played an integral part in their community, and to a certain extent, they still do, but they've been gobbled up or minimized by the big banks, which have kind of taken over everything, and they're like a malignancy. They're just like corporations. They're malignant. They're a deadly cancer that's got to be excised out or shrunk down to nothing. You know, it's just, they're harmful.
They have to be returned to
their original state, like corporations have to be too. They have to be given a short life. They can't buy other corporations. You know, in the early days, corporations were designed with a specific goal in mind, a limited goal in mind, and they had to benefit the community. Little by little, they've perverted the concept of corporation to become the all-encompassing malignant monster it is today, and it is strangling the country. It's killing the country, just like a malignancy.
I hear you. That was pretty good. So I got to ask you, what do you think is going to... Did you hear about Mr. Trump being able to persuade NBC to come to his terms for the next debate?
Oh, my God. Well, I guess nothing was... Well, he's a front runner now, and he's commanding a lot of weight, and he knows how to push his weight around. You know, there's no doubt about it. He probably flung his hair in their face, and they said, oh, mercy, mercy. You know, who knows? But, yeah, he knows how to push his... He knows how to cut a deal, and he's giving them an offer they feel they can't refuse, evidently. I don't even know all the aspects of it, but I'm not surprised.
Can you imagine a country led by Mr. Trump?
Oh, not at all. As far as I can't imagine a debate run on his terms. Is he going to do all the speaking or 99% of it? Is that what it's going to be?
I have no idea. I saw the headline before I got... I've been very busy with...
I mean, are the other candidates going to have to bow down before him before they begin? You know, I wonder. You know, I'd be so shocked I'd fall right off my chair if I found out it was something very, very fair and equitable and actually conducive to a good discussion. and not something trumped up to
yeah.
you know, brought up to benefit him and him alone, you know, or mainly him. We'll find out.
Well, any more than I can think of Ben Carson as an actual doctor.
I guess he's quite brilliant in his narrow field, which, you know, which is pretty encompassing for its field. But he doesn't belong in a White House, that's for damn sure. And he says the craziest things. It makes me wonder if he's a lobotomized himself.
No, I can't. I tend to think he's some kind of functional idiot savant if he's good at what he
does. Right, right.
No, because the man talks bullshit.
Oh,
he really does. He talks.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah,
he talks nonsense.
Yeah, Trump and Carson are symptoms of the general decline of the Republican Party and what the people who cling to it. I mean,
and even worse, the American electorate and how fed up they are with the same old politicians. That's why they're so popular, because they're not the same old politicians.
Yeah, and you can add to that mix that female, Carly Fiorina. Yeah, I just.
Ooh, Carly.
She's really terrible. I mean,
she's nuts too.
And all she does is bully word.
Yeah.
And one of her favorite sayings is to eject out in clearly enunciated lie. And then,
oh, she tells so many lies.
And then to add the tag on it all day long. And I'm like, oh, my God, people are actually doing this? Thank you, Jim.
Yeah. Well, she's repeating a lie big enough, often enough, to gain some credibility among some very foolish, naive people that don't really know the score. Some low-information voters are really... putting stock in what she says, and the bellicose nature of Donald Trump, that appeals to some people too. Yeah, he's really telling them, that's my man. These people are stupid. They don't pay attention. They don't delve far enough into the matter to find out what's really going on. They don't even care. They just like what they hear, and oh, I'm impressed with that guy. I want to be like him.
It's absolutely true.
That's pathetic.
We're at the top of the hour. Why don't you tell folks where they can find you?
Well, my blog is inoperative for a short time now. I'm going to get it fixed here pretty soon, but it's called the Saturday Afternoon Post. There's a mountain of archives you can go into for the last 6 or 7 years and read all kinds of enlightening, progressive entries that I've made over that time. And I hope to be up and running again here pretty soon. And I often do it in association with Bird Deming of fairandunbalanced.com, fairandunbalanced.com. Please go to that site and look at his stuff. He does very thoughtful writing, and he's very adept at podcasting. So you want to check out his site whenever you can.
Okay. Well,
and thanks to all the gang at Roundtree 7, especially Krell, who was so invaluable today and every week. Your input is most appreciated. Your writing is phenomenally good, and you're very insightful and very thoughtful. And, David, hats off to you for that. And stay in good health, my friend.
Yeah, and happy birthday to him, too.
Oh, yes, happy birthday, Krell.
And I guess that's all she wrote for this show. I thank you for listening. I'm Gwen Berry in South Florida. And I would remind you that we are sponsored by Roundtree7, the number 7.com. And we will be back with F. Wayne Johnson next week for another Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. Jack, thank you. Will you sign us off with your tagline?
Yes, thank you, Gwen. It's the Saturday Afternoon Post. And Gwen, a shout out to you, Wayne, a shout out to you. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week, my friend. Keep up the good work there.
Okay, and that's the end of our show. Thank you for listening.